Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Low ride. Welcome back to the Survival and Basic Badass Podcast, Kevin and Chuck. Today, we're going to talk about sanitation. I guess everybody poops, but only some of us are washing our hands. So we're going to get to the bottom of that, because it turns out when you don't have doctors and medicine and good stuff like antibiotics, sanitation becomes an issue. Not washing your hands actually starts to matter. So that's the thing. When you're showering every day, turns out you're probably not filthy. And when you aren't showering but once a week or every other week, then your hands get really dirty. And when you cut them, all that nasty shit gets inside. And when it gets inside, that's where infections come from. And then infections require antibiotics. Turns out it's a lot easier to wash your hands than to have a shit ton of antibiotics around. So hopefully we can give you some ideas on how to keep your hands a little cleaner and keep your world a little bit cleaner. So hopefully that's the plan. This was actually a listener had reached out to us and wanted us to kind of talk about sanitation. And I can't help but think that this is a great idea. So Kevin, take us down I'm sure I can come to the listeners. Actually, it was just said DK.
Okay. All right. So one of the things that I think a lot of people take for granted in modern age is that you can turn on your tap and clean water comes out. And you can poop in the toilet and clean water washes it away. And it's just gone. It's like magic. So it's estimated that clean drinking water saves 160,000 people per day in the world just by, you know, providing clean drinking water. There's a lot of stuff in your poop that can make everybody around you sick. So, you know, things like Giardia, Salmonella, E. coli, even hepatitis. So, you know, remember that computer game, The Oregon Trail? And people would die from dysentery.
Yeah,
that's a real thing, and it happens. And that's when you drink other people's poop. So.
Right. Number one killer in the uncivilized world.
Diarrhea. And, you know, I got to tell you.
It's weird because the poop actually gets you sick.
That's right. That's right. More. And I think it's, you know, it's interesting. I don't want to be somebody that dies from pooping too much. That just doesn't seem like a pleasant way to go. You know what I mean? Oh. So let's talk about how to get rid of our poop. The first one that seems like, you know, one you need a little bit more planning for is a composting toilet. So, I know that a lot of people with tiny houses and things like that have composting toilets. You know, there's benefit to the composting toilet. It's low smell, and it's pretty safe disposable, safe to dispose of. So, what do you know about composting toilets, Chuck? I know you had one at one point.
All right. Well, obviously, we have some fancy ones you can do now. If you guys remember way back, we talked about one of my kids built a tiny house and he had a kind of a do-it-yourself homemade composting toilet. I guess there's a bunch of tiny house communities and they all chat and share ideas and different ways to kind of make your world work. So anyway, I thought this was going to be a horrible idea and it ended up working out surprisingly well, relatively. Now, I like the option where I hit the thing and the water flushes it away, never to be seen again. That's my preferred pooping method, mm-hmm. I'm just saying, putting that out there. All right. But if my options were limited, what they did was they set up they actually, in the tiny house, built like a regular bathroom. And we made a like a wood box toilet with a toilet seat. I think it actually came forward a little so your legs aren't like sitting on the square box, you know, like mm-hmm. when you think of an outhouse. Oh, there's ways to do it, right? Setting up some kind of pee guard at the front so you could be a little, you know, you're not pissing against the front wall of the thing. There's ways to work this out. All right. You'll have to search the interwebs on that one. But as far as the proper function, think of it like this. Think 5-gallon bucket. Now, in this world, what we did was 5-gallon bucket, threw some pine wood chips that they were buying the big cubic yard or whatever, a tractor supply. They drop some in the bottom. They poop in it, and then they drop a little more pine wood chips on top. Now, not exactly, I guess one of the things they talked about was you wanted to actually urinate somewhere else. You wanted to have one for kind of urine and one for taking a crap. The taking a crap, you just keep adding the wood chips. When it fills up, you go throw it in a compost pile. In my world, that would not be used compost for growing food, but it can compost and take care of itself. Other people's world, they're happy to use it in the garden. And they're like, look, my poop grows my flowers. That maybe is you and not me. But, you know, whatever. Either way, that ends up being reasonably sanitary. You need to be able to put this at least, I would say, I like 100 yards. I think they were shooting for 150 feet. So probably 50 yards, but about 100 yards away from any kind of living space or whatever. And I would say probably 300 yards from your water would be awesome. You know, again, you got to work the world that you live in. Definitely no closer than 100 yards. Now, this is your composting end. The way they worked out the urine, I think, was they basically had some kind of like funnel, I think, with a hose that ran it out and ran it away to a, you know, something, some kind of tank. But you can work out the urine end on your end and the compost, that works. Bottom line, so you can build an outhouse, have a bucket where you open the back door. Now you're saying, well, Chuck, I'm not going to be able to get these wood chips from Tractor Supply indefinitely in the end of the world. Well, it turns out you can use any kind of organic matter like leaves. I would say dirt, but not really. It's not going to break it down as much. It's going to be better than nothing. Great if you can throw some lime on top of it every now and again, mix it in. But if you can just put some kind of dead leaves, that kind of stuff over it, organic matter, you know, and you just have a bucket and you kind of keep adding to the other as you go. It really was low smell. Like I said, he had it in his tiny house and you did not notice it as a problem. Again, obviously you need a lid for that toilet and you don't need it, you know, kind of permeating the whole place, but it really ended up being surprisingly not bad. So if it was an outhouse, this would not be a bad way to go. So something you guys might want to think about. Now, I guess the next thing, go ahead.
Let's talk about just putting together a basic outhouse before we get into that.
Okay.
So there's a lot of options for outhouses, right? You can have the tank in there. You can have a composting toilet. You can have a big hole underneath. Either, you know, any way you go, you're still going to have some sort of a structure to poop in. So now I know you and I, Chuck, do you remember up in Canada, they had the outhouse up there? And that was they didn't have indoor plumbing for a long time up there. I remember.
Well, and definitely for the winters was the big thing. For the winters, the water would be shut off. Because it basically the water, I think, where we were came out of a lake. And I don't know. This was back before the hills got dusty. And, you know, it wasn't easy to solve problems like this. We'll say that.
Right. So they had a decent outhouse. And putting together your outhouse is really... You want to build it for comfort. So let's start there. So you're going to want a minimum of, you know, you're going to want to think about how many people are using your outhouse. Is it just you? Is it like you and a friend that have a cabin up in the woods? Is it a whole family? Do you have like, you know, parties up there? So you might want to build more than a one-seater with a partition between the two.
Okay.
It depends on what you're going for.
Well, multiple outhouses might be the answer.
Do you have to have the half moon
in the door, or how does that work?
Oh, absolutely. That's just mandatory, So you want to have ventilation. That's the main thing. You don't want to box it in. And you even want to maybe do a pipe directly into your tank or your pit that goes out to have airflow going through it. That's good because it helps break down the shit faster.
Okay.
You know, airflow. Now, what type of ground are you building it on? That's another thing to think about. Is it rock? Is it sand? You know, you don't want the whole outhouse to sink into the poop hole underneath. So you got to have some plans for that. You might want to have a backhoe if you can do it. If you can get a piece of equipment in there. Because, you know, you can build a deep, narrow hole. You know what I mean? When you're digging with a shovel, that's a bit more tricky to do. And if you have a lot of rock in there, it's going to be a real nightmare. So you want to think about that. But also rock is beneficial because it can help stabilize your outhouse and keep it from sinking in on you. You know what I mean? So that's basically what I got on outhouses. What do you think?
All right. Well, like I said, I do like a 5-gallon bucket that's removable. Having like a little back door on the hatch that keeps you, but there's nothing wrong with kind of digging a deep hole, then moving the outhouse and filling in the hole. And just kind of, you know, if you have a couple of guys, you can carry it, moving on to the next place. It's one way to go. I do like being able to take it away. I would recommend if you got the heavy equipment, you can dig some holes now. I mean, I plan on taking my heavy equipment into the apocalypse. You know, I plan on having options after, But pre-digging holes is never a bad idea. You never know when you need to bury something. I mean, that could always come up. That could always come
up. Comes up all the time.
There you go.
All right. So let's talk about washing our hands and washing our buttholes. That's another thing to keep clean.
Those two things. Now, I know you've mentioned in the past you like to use moss for your butthole, that it gives you that squishy, soft feeling.
That's right. It breaks down. It's perfect. Great. Yeah, I know it leaves a lot of moss in your butt, but that's right. That's right. What I don't like are the flushable wipes, because they are flushable technically. They will go down your toilet, but they also never break down. And the big part of the outhouse and the that stuff there is that it all breaks down. You want to break it down so it doesn't, you know, it breaks down enough that it doesn't make you sick if it, you know, if it comes up again, if it gets into the water supply, if it does something like that. And putting stuff down there that doesn't break down as well is just going to – it's going to fill up full of nastiness. So just think about that when you're wiping your butt.
Good to know. That's one of the secrets of the pros right there.
Right. Another thing that's important there is soap. Keeping your hands clean, keeping everything washed, being able to wash stuff. So there's a lot of different options here for disinfecting your hands and keeping things clean. One of my favorites is rubbing alcohol. It's really cheap and you can mix it with water. And it lasts forever. You know, if you get a bottle of rubbing alcohol, you can set it on your shelf and it'll be the same rubbing alcohol 100 years from now. You know, it's not something that expires or goes bad. Bleach is another great option, but that's something you got really about a 6 month to a year lifespan on bleach before it starts, you know, starting to degrade into something that's not really useful anymore.
Right.
Now, another thing for preppers that I think about is as being an important thing to stockpile is actual bars of soap. That's another thing that just, you know, it'll last on your shelf forever. You can get it very inexpensively. You can get it by the bar from, you know, the grocery store or any place like that. You can buy it in bulk. You can make it yourself if you want to save a little bit of money.
Right.
Now, I'm not a big soap maker, but I was thinking about getting into it. So did a little bit of research for it. And unfortunately, I'm going to talk to somebody about making soap tonight after we make the show. So it's not really beneficial for right now. What do you think there, Chuck?
Well, so, you know, basically soap is lye and fat and something that smells pretty, right? So you can maybe get your like lavender flowers or some nonsense. You know, Kevin likes to smell pretty. I know that. The lye you can make out of wood ash, and it takes a couple days. We did another episode where we kind of went deeper in how to do that. But and you're going to need some like preemptive stuff, like some thicker rubber gloves, maybe some safety glasses. Things you're going to think about beforehand, you know, you don't want to, you know, ever add water to the lye when you're making it, because that makes like bubbly volcano disaster. But anyway,
right. Well, I mean, you've got gloves and safety glasses, so it doesn't matter, right?
And volcanoes are fun.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, that's something to, you know, that's another episode, because we did actually talk about how to get into that. But basically, lye, animal fat you could use, and something that smells pretty. And you kind of work it out. I know if you guys have seen Fight Club, I know you know there's other options on the table. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. Get your fat from multiple places.
Multiple places, you know, wherever you got to go. You can use some different oils and things too. And there's ways to, if you plan ahead, you can buy oils to like add scents and stuff that'll carry on for a long time. You know, that you'll be able to have a small quantity of stuff, you like peppermint or something, and have it last. And I know peppermint has some kind of antibiotic properties there, things like that you can do. Let's kind of loop back around. We talked about alcohol and soap. Let's loop around to, is there maybe a way we can be more efficient when we're not getting as dirty? Let's talk about like cleanup for when we're cooking, things like that. Are there things we could do? I mean, that was one of the things in the email they had talked about, you know, could we use about like disposable plastic gloves? Now, again, this is kind of contradictory to avoiding waste, but it does add the simplicity. You're going right. to need certain things that are going to help out in an emergency or when you're on the go or in, you know, on the fly when you need to do something quickly. There's going to be things like aluminum foil, wax paper, like liners for your slow cooker, things like that, paper plates, right? Those degrade and they can make your washing and cleanup 1,000 times easier. Paper cups, you know, things like that. They make liners for the Dutch oven and things like that. Do you have salt and pepper? Things like that, right? Might be something to think about. Also plastic utensils, Ziploc bags. But again, think about reusing these items if you have them, as opposed to adding them to the waste and the whatever, you know. But again, that kind of right. gets around the benefit of easy use, you know, like the paper plates. Yeah, they can be tossed. They're used for starting the fire, you know, the next morning or whatever, bringing it back to life, something like that. That's a win. You know, the waste, it's going to make life and clean up sanitation a lot easier. I'm sure you could have 1,000 paper plates for a very inexpensive amount of money. And that covers a lot of meals right there and a lot of cleanup. And again, burning the stuff right yeah. after, you're probably running a fire if you're cooking food. So, you know, getting rid of it, it doesn't sound like an issue. The plastic utensils, I'm sure somebody makes some kind of biodegradable thing like that, but maybe that's a little less effective. But I know that foil would be great, and foil can be reusable. Another way right. to go
I think,
there.
You know, I think a lot of that really is to me, ideally, everything is reusable. You know, you can get the heavier, like you were talking about, the heavier rubber gloves, you know, those like kitchen dishwashing rubber gloves.
Yeah.
And just wash those off and reuse them again. As far as silverware, you know, I think it's easiest to have, you know, just some set silverware, not, you know, not a 100-piece set or something,
right.
but a spoon, fork, knife type deal. Having that sort of stuff around that you can simply wash it or wipe it off with, you know, some sort of rags and things like that and rinse it off. I love paper plates. Anytime I go out, you know, backpacking or anything, I bring paper plates with me. They're great for fire starter. And they're also, you know, like you said, you can use them. And then you don't have food waste laying around smelling things up and drawing in animals. Right. And that's really one of the big things is keeping the animals away. Rodents, rats, things like that are never great to have around. And, you know, stuff just gets nasty and draws in, you know, the smells just draw in things. You're talking about aluminum foil. That's a big thing for me. You're also talking about Ziploc bags. Now, I keep a lot of Ziploc bags. The bigger ones, the, you know, whatever, 1 gallon size, they're great for multiple uses. If I'm backpacking or if I'm out in the woods or doing some traveling, I usually do like a set, you know, underwear, t-shirt, socks in those 1 gallon aluminum bags. So you can swap everything out and keep clean, and you can put the dirty stuff right back in the bag and seal it up, and it's not smelling all the rest of your stuff up. I personally had a Serbian grandmother that did this, and I'm sure a bunch of you guys did.
Sure.
You know, rinsing out the Ziploc bags and letting them dry and reusing them again. I thought it was a little bit gross when I was a kid.
The neighbor kids. Yep.
Sure. That's exactly it. Yep. I thought it was gross when I was a little kid, but or when I was younger, but now that I'm an old man, everything is less disgusting to me. I've just gotten used to this. Everything disgusting in the world.
You also saved the wrapping paper at Christmas. Is that right?
Yep. That was the same grandma, wasn't it? Oh man.
No.
But I think grandma knew a lot of stuff about that, those sorts of things, you know? A lot of our grandmothers grew up during the Great Depression, and, you know, they reuse stuff. And you can learn a lot from those women, especially when it comes time, you know, when a time comes around where, you know, everything isn't disposable.
Right.
You know, where things are valuable, and being able to reuse things is going to be a big help when there's a shortage on anything.
Right.
Now, one thing that I don't want people to do,
okay,
but sometimes it's necessary, is what the French call pipi sauvage, which translates to wild pissers. Now, they've got a problem in a lot of their cities where men will just piss on the sidewalk.
Yes.
Not great.
Really?
Not great. Not real healthy.
That's not a sanitation helper. And I know
so if you're
going to
poop.
Go ahead.
If you're going to poop or pee in the wild, you're going to want to take certain steps. So this is something to think about when you're out, even if you're just out camping, you know? So you don't want to be pooping right next to a water source. And I don't mean just a water source of water you're drinking. I mean other water sources. There's a disease called Giardia, right? And that's why you can't just drink stream water anymore. You used to be able to do it. But there are so many people that have pissed in stream waters that now Giardia infects beavers. And the beavers will then piss in the water. And if anybody drinks that water, now you're sick. That's why you can't drink stream water anymore. And it's all because of you dirty motherfuckers pissing in streams. So just keep that in mind when you're out in the wild.
All right. There is so many people pissing in the water that I was watching a thing on YouTube, and I'm not even sure how true this is, but I found it disturbing either way, so I feel like I need to share it. The guy took 2 5-gallon buckets, and he filled one. Well, he filled both with water, and he put he said twice the amount of bleach that he thought was reasonable for, you know, for that amount of water. So 5-gallon bucket. I think he ended up putting like an ounce of bleach in each one, and let it sit for 3 days. Now, he thought, oh, with all that bleach in there, that water's really going to stink, right? Then he added an ounce of urine to one of the 2 buckets, all right? And waited 2 days, opened them up, smelled both. One, he said, had completely no smell. The one that he added the urine to had that familiar pool chlorine smell. And he's like, wait a minute. I've been smelling my piss reacting with the urine the whole time. And I'm like, oh, shit. So that's maybe an experiment one of you guys wants to get on, get to the bottom of it. But if your pool smells very chloriney, there might be a problem. And that problem might be you.
That's right. That's
just
right.
Putting that out there.
I was always told as a kid that your pee turns blue in the pool. They add
secret
chemical.
Secret chemical.
That chemical does not exist. Just to be clear,
you've been
there's nothing
for it?
That is going to react with your pee.
Okay, we're
and
safe.
Light it up.
I can just
we're
let
safe.
It go.
You can pee in a public pool and nobody will know.
Except for the smell.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, when
you
get
you
that strong chlorine smell, that's it turns out he's like, yeah, that the guy goes, yeah, this smells like my childhood. I was like, oh no. that's
oh,
bad.
Shit.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing to think about though is what are you doing with your waste on your property? How is that gonna play out in a you know, that's a lot of these off-grid guys really have it down pat, where they are kind of producing zero waste, you know, where stuff is going into the compost, the stuff like the foil and stuff is being reused. They're selective with what right. they're, you know, the products they purchase with how they're packaged, you know. If they are coming in plastic containers, are these containers we can reuse, or is this stuff that's going to, you know, just become part of the landfill problem? Think about that in your long-term prep kind of stuff. Think about what you can wash out and reuse and that kind of stuff. Think about where you would, you know, like what can you separate? Are there things that we can't put in the compost, Kevin, or?
I'm real big on compost. That's one of my, you know, one of my little hobbies here. So everything can go in the compost except for everything that's biodegradable except for meat. And the reason meat is it doesn't go in there is because it just stinks. It just smells like dead animal when it's decomposing. And you don't want that smell around. You know, it draws in, like I said, it draws in some nasty stuff. But just regular food composting can draw in some nasty stuff too. So it's something you want to keep away from your house. So what you want in there for a good compost is a good mix between green and brown waste. So that means like dried leaves and things like that. And also, you know, clippings.
Oh, it's so, not the other kind of brown waste?
No, not that type. But all your vegetable clippings, all your stuff like that can go in there. The smaller it's cut up, the better. You don't necessarily want to throw lawn clippings in there just because it kind of clumps together and it just kind of gets kind of nasty and septic smelling and stuff. So if you do throw lawn clippings in there, you know, let them dry out a little bit first before you do that. Same with leaves. You want to only throw leaves in there that you've run over with the lawnmower. You don't want to just throw the regular leaves you rake up in there. Some things you shouldn't put in your compost is onions, garlic, or citrus fruit, because that it's got an antibacterial. They've all got like antibacterial function, so they're going to slow down your composting. I've gotten it down to where I'm going through one kitchen sized trash bag a week. So I've really got my waste down to almost nothing. I recycle, burn all paper products just because, you know, I'm paranoid. I'm a crazy person. I don't throw my mail in the garbage because, you know, somebody could get a hold of it. So I burn all that sort of stuff and I've got it down to just about nothing. Just one step up above nothing. It's my waste for the week.
Well, that sounds like, I mean, where we all want to get to, you know? But the thing is, so you need to come up with, like, especially those of you who aren't out in the country, who live in a tighter area, you need to kind of come up with a plan real quick of what you guys are going to do in your small community with your waste, and you need to kind of push people into setting up a organized compost and stuff like that. Or everybody doing it on a small scale, but you don't need somebody's property getting overrun with rats. It's going to affect you when you're all in a tight area, you know?
Right.
And bad things will come, and that is how diseases are spread. You know, I mean, that's how I imagine everyone's so worried about the roving gangs and, yeah, they're going to be the first wave of, you know, devastation to the population. But the second wave is going to be disease. It's going to come with 100%. Madness, you know? And, you know, yeah, the first week, you know, you're not really overrun with, you know, filth and disease. But a couple of weeks in, things will start to get a little ripe. When Kevin and I were discussing this earlier, he had mentioned you know, New York City, when they do their trash strikes, it doesn't get pretty. And I mean, look at the streets of California. No. It's not pretty.
Right. Right. I remember seeing some of those pictures when they went on strike, and it was after a week, and it was just mountains of garbage bags, and it was just full of rats. You know, that's New York City is disgusting because of that. It's all rats and cockroaches. That's 90% of what what's living in that city.
That, and it turns out there's a bunch of wild pissers there as well.
That's right. Wild pissers everywhere. But it is something that gets out of hand real fast. So, I mean, it is something to think about and keep in the back of your head, you know, and starting to take some action now ahead of time is a great way to be prepared for when it actually starts going down. Now, you were talking about some advertising ideas for our podcast, Chuck.
Yes, what are you thinking?
Investing? What's that?
Some investing opportunities?
Yeah. So you were talking about investing in gold and silver as a way to back stuff up. But you're also talking about something that I thought was a little bit more interesting, investing in whiskey. So whiskey barrels, you can buy whiskey barrels.
And that is a true 18%?
Thing. 18%?
All right, 18%. Yep.
All right, so you buy the whiskey in the barrel, then you just keep it safe someplace and then sell it?
They keep it safe for you.
Okay.
This is let me see who the hell it is, because they're sending me emails. The Whiskey and Wealth Company something. They're sending me emails every day. Whiskey and Wealth Club.
And all right.
It's a bunch of, you know, Irish or Scottish guys. I don't know if there's a difference. Sure, you're like, Chuck, they're different islands completely. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. I can't understand either one of them, so whatever. But they basically, they're warehousing these whiskey barrels, and maybe you need to buy one. You hold it for a couple of years, it matures. Somebody's like, hey, I drink whiskey. Let me buy that barrel from you. And you drop that shit out. So that's definitely got some possibilities.
Is that what they talk about when it's aged whiskey? All right.
Well, no. Three
so
years
hypothetically,
just, it turns out 3 years in one day just makes it whiskey.
Okay.
You need that. That's right out of the gate. Yeah, that's not. Yeah.
Okay. And so hypothetically, I could buy my own barrels of whiskey, though. And
hypothetically.
Just store them myself.
Hypothetically.
Right, and if the return is 18%, hypothetically, I could drink 18% of the whiskey from that each one of those barrels and then be able to sell it back for the same amount of money that I paid for it. I mean, to me, that seems like the real interest, you know, the real return you want on something like that. Personally, I think that's a pretty great idea. I mean, this is a real plan. This is something's coming together here. Now, it's whiskey and scotch are the same thing, right? It's just whiskey comes from Ireland and scotch comes from Scotland. Or is there a real difference in what they use to make it?
And then bourbon's from Kentucky. That's the.
Right. All right. You know, I've always been much more of a fan of whiskey than I was of scotch or bourbon, but I feel like there's not that big of a difference between them. I think I just got sick on scotch and I got sick on bourbon when I was a youngster and have never really got over it.
That part sounds accurate.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if you guys have any topics you want to talk about, if you have anything you want us to touch on, email
questions,
us at preppingbadass@gmail.com. You can go to our Patreon and donate and keep us from having to have advertisements. Or
like that. Or maybe.
Or go to our Facebook page.
You want some badass gear. You need to go to preppingbadass.com and get some of those cool t-shirts. But otherwise, I would say stay safe and we'll talk to you guys next week.
The Survival and Basic Badass Podcast is a proud member of the Self Defense Radio Network.
I'm Will Cooper, and you're listening to HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast on the Waypoint Podcast Network. Stick around as I bring you more stories and interviews from veteran hunters and industry professionals who inspire us all to be better equipped in the woods and in life. I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from HuntStand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.
Through the Blackwater bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinner's crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.